There was a time when Gaines Street was just a name. Not much lived there except industrial warehouses and empty lots. Well, much has changed since then, and two of the pioneers of that change, Jay Scott, owner of The Warehouse, a Tallahassee staple, and Paul Rutkowski, owner of the experimental art space The Plant, both passed away in April of this year. Today, we have a conversation that's a song to their memory and an honor to their work. Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Warehouse. I'm your host, Josh Johnson, and like always, we are joined with an incredibly special guest. Today's guest is just on another level special for this programming because Dwayne Daughtry is the former co-owner of a Tallahassee staple, The Warehouse, which the name of this show draws such great inspiration. And the reason that I'm bringing you on today, Dwayne, first of all, thanks for coming.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. As you know, the thing that's anchoring this spot is last month, or in the month of April, we lost just two incredibly important people for the Gaines Street corridor. Jay Scott, who was your business partner in The Warehouse, and Paul Rutkowski, who was the owner of The Plant. A lot of people know it as the Window Art Gallery. As a tribute to both of those heavy hitters, I wanted to bring you on today to talk a little bit about the old days and some of today. So again, thanks for joining us. And I want to jump right in. In preparing for this spot, I got a hold of an old newspaper article. And I want to read the first line or two from that. One night at The Warehouse, you might walk in and find a woman wearing a mask, standing in a cage, atop a fake palm tree or over 2 hours. Another evening, someone might be screening obscure Andy Warhol films. The next week, a local heavy metal band will be bashing about. On another visit, you can catch a dancer from the East Village of New York interpreting her impressions of Afghanistan. The Warehouse, this local legend, it started as a space that was kind of like an open forum, as this news article says. Tell me a little bit about that. I've heard you say that you guys had no business plan or no business model. The people just came to you. Tell us about how they came.
Well, George Barker, who started Ka Chapel,
sure,
was, I think, the first one that approached us. And, you know, at the time, we had no really solid plans for the building. We were using it to store plants in, and I made a mistake of cutting two large holes in the roof and putting fiberglass over them to get some light in there, which created a continuous drip. But anyway, we were looking for any way to get some income on the building, and George came up with, you know, his group put together a plan, and they helped us get the place in order,
sure,
you know, to kick things off. And everything started from that point.
Am I right in saying that The Warehouse started as an art gallery?
Well, that was our intention. I mean, George, that was just a temporary thing, you know. And,
sure.
And we saw right then the possibility of, well, you know, doing something with it. I mean, Jay and I were like, styled ourselves from a little Robert Service poem, like the men who didn't fit in.
Uh-huh.
We didn't want to work for anybody. And, you know, we had a couple of floor shops and a greenhouse at Railroad Square.
The Bloom Room, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That had caved in with Hurricane Kate. And so anyway, we said, well, God, maybe we can do something in the entertainment world. I mean, you know, we like to hang out at bars, and so, well, you know, we're struggling for a living here. Maybe we can do something that's a little fun.
Sure.
At the time, we were both taking an aesthetics course at, you know, in philosophy department at FSU, and that sort of, you know, we were just really interested in art, and, well, that seemed like a possibility, and so, yeah, we explored that.
Sure.
And, of course, there was no way to make any money on that, you know, really. as you know, owning an art gallery. But so one thing led to another, and we did have a few art shows, and they were sporadic, I mean, they were stretched out through the years, but and all of them were a lot of fun and, you know, successful to a degree.
Well, now it grows into, from that, quite possibly Tallahassee's most iconic music venue. I mean, the only competition could be the Moon or maybe Car Chapel, but you guys become just one of the peaks of the local music scene. And as I understand it, you know, Jay had a lot of responsibilities like the bookkeeping and the organizing and all that good stuff, but you were the man behind the music.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had to, you know, share responsibilities.
Sure.
And of course, Jay was, you know, vital to every decision we made, you know. But, yeah, and I had an affinity for music, and especially the singer-songwriter stuff at the time, and still to this day, but we didn't know really how to approach that either. You know, like you said, we really had no idea what we were doing. But there was a very vibrant music scene in those days. I mean, there were plenty of really fine bands in Tallahassee, you know, and artists.
You know what? That's a perfect segue. When we talk about, I'm going to talk about some of the national acts that came through the warehouse too. But as we talk about local bands, I mean, you guys had Bo Gazzitti, Dale Suggs and Pierce Pettis, Bill Wharton, the Sauce Boss, who was an alumni of this show,
The
Pat Ramsey Band, Pat Puckett and the Casualties. You know, all of these people that have just become like Mount Rushmore of local music, kind of formed in the Petri dish that is the warehouse. How do you feel about that?
Well, looking back on it, it feels like an accomplishment, to tell you the truth. Of course, we had no idea where any of that was leading.
Sure.
You know? And while we're talking, I'd like to give a little shout-out to Bill Wharton and his energy and great music, bringing the people together to have a good time with his gumbo. My hat's off to him.
Absolutely. And then it didn't just stop there because, you know, I have a perfect question for you. One of the problems with Tallahassee and touring bands today is we're seen as a stop that's not worth stopping in. Back then, it was a complete opposite. Tallahassee was a perfect place to stop, whether you were coming from the South or headed down South. What do you think's changed about that, or what did you guys do that we're not doing now? Was it marketing? Was it a different time where people were just on tour buses instead of airplanes? Like, why were you guys getting such huge local and national acts that don't come today?
I think you may have hit on it there at the end. May have had something to do with the travel.
Sure.
The way people travel there. So a fellow from East Coast Entertainment who booked a lot of bands with us. He contacted us. I don't know how he heard of us, but you know, that kind of gets around that stuff, I guess. And and that's what he told us. It's a great spot for bands coming and going through Florida.
Absolutely.
And we had a lot of bands that were going and coming both ways.
Well, I mean, just to hit a few of them, you guys had the Flaming Lips before they were this huge national act, Sonic Youth, Towns Van Zandt, you know, Blue Rodeo, Gamble Rogers. You guys really, from your work, were able to just pull some really cool local attractions. As a matter of fact, another alumni of this show, Gamble Cosmos, takes his name from Gamble Rogers. And so I don't care whether you're 21 in this city or 81 in this city, the warehouse means something, and it's all nostalgia. It's all nostalgia. Your kids grew up in the warehouse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? What kind of experience was that like for them, you think?
I'll really have to bore down and ask him about that. But, I mean, I can remember my daughter, I think she was 12 years old, was at the Blue Rodeo concert, you know, having just as much fun as any of us. And my son did a little bartending there. I don't think he cottoned to it too much, but
sure,
he did. And we all pitched in. It was a family business, and so we did what we had to.
Do you see yourself as a community builder or a businessman? Or a bit of both?
Or really neither. You know, like I said, a lot of it was accidental. It just happened,
sure.
You know. And I think a lot of the nostalgia, as you say, and warm feelings maybe about came from the space itself. You know, it was looking back on it, it was an accommodating kind of thing. It was certainly unique. Mm-hmm. There was no other bar that was like that in the terms of, you know, the decor.
Yeah. Yeah, Mark Henson says it was a little bit of New York Soho and a little bit of Southern Fish Camp all meshed into one.
Yeah, and that's pretty accurate, I think. But, you know, it was just comfortable and cozy for a lot of people. And we had done so much, so many different things that a lot of people became exposed to it for one reason or the other. And, of course, you know, its proximity to FSU, the campus itself. And it was just a place where we were talking about it the other day, the diversity there. Mm-hmm. People from all walks of life, professional to working people to students, I mean, would gather there any afternoon, you know, have a few beers, and you could always find a space to, you know, put with your own people, you know, and not be disturbed, and that's, you know, walk out on the deck or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, I heard somebody say one night it would be a punk band, and the next night it would be the fur coat crowd,
yeah.
And anybody could fit in. Now, at the beginning, you guys didn't really have set hours, right? You guys were kind of just like open as a rental community space for whatever the next cool thing was. Am I right about that?
Yeah, one thing led to another. I mean, you know, we were not a bar per se. We were event controlled.
Sure.
You know, event oriented. And, you know, the only way that we could keep the doors open was charge a cover.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it costs money to open the doors and run the electricity and the AC and pay the people and all that. And so, and it was hard to fit a lot of local bands in that way to charge a cover for them when they were playing for free all over town, you know.
Sure.
But one thing led to another. And, you know, people started calling us to see if it was rental. Rental space, you know, and so we started exploring that, and, you know, fraternities and sororities, even for, you know, FAMU and FSU, which we tried to limit. That was a lot of work, keeping up with those people. But but there were many, many different benefits, you know.
Sure. I heard you in your first answer say that you and Jay were both very interested in philosophy early on. And, you know, one part of philosophy is aesthetics, how something looks, how it came to look that way. We've kind of talked about that with the warehouse. Let's talk about another end of philosophy, which is like the ideology. Did you guys have a business philosophy, or was this all just shooting from the hip, see how it goes, it is what it is?
It really was just a spontaneous, kind of thing. You can't help but be who you are, and that's what we did.
You know,
try and enjoy it, really. You know, trying to make a living and enjoy it for a change.
Sure. Something that always comes up on this show, for whatever reason, is Jimmy Carter. He's like a little thread in this show. And you guys had, if I'm not mistaken, the Swimming Pool Cues perform at the warehouse years ago, who were the performers, or one of the performers at Jimmy Carter's inauguration. My next question isn't based on that. My next question is, the acts that you had there, did you become fans of any of that music because you heard them play for the first time in the warehouse and keep up with them through a life?
Well, there certainly were bands that I had never heard of before.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, of course, we would listen to them before we would, you know, decide whether we could handle it. But Blue Rodeo was one of them.
Uh-huh.
And that was a situation where Scott Carswell had double booked over at the Moon, and you know, he wanted to honor that somehow. So he came to us and asked us to put it on. And I listened to the tape, and I said, boy, these guys are really professional, really good. And I asked Pat Puckett, you know, who was the leader of kind of our, I called our house band, you know, at the time. Sure. And Pat said, it was one of my favorite bands. And I said, well, great, you're opening for them. And so, yeah, and that was a really great little show they put on.
Absolutely. Jenny, Jay's wife.
Yeah.
How important was she to the venue?
I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, Jenny's like a sister to me. You know, we're still very close. And anybody that knows Jenny, well, she ran the Bloom Room at Market Square for 40 plus, almost 50 years, I would say. And all the clients that she had and all her presence at the warehouse during all the shows and doing what she wanted to. She worked sometimes if she felt like it behind the bar or not, but she has to be one of the most well-known people in this town, uh-huh. You know. Her maiden name was Bella Via, which in Italian means the beautiful way, and anybody that knows Jenny can attest to that.
She lives in a beautiful way.
Yeah.
The article that I referenced, that I did some research on, serendipitously enough, the article was published May 20th, 1988. I'm born May 6th, 1988. So
yeah.
14 days prior to this article, some kids being born that's going to honor you guys in a cool way one day. But in this article, you've got names like Terry Galloway from Mickey Faust, who in some ways got their start in the warehouse. Steve Kurtz from the Critical Art Ensemble, who in a lot of ways got his start at the warehouse, who also recently passed not too many months ago. George Barker of Ka Chapel. Mark Henson's the writer of this article. You know, all of these people that have not only decorated this city, helped decorate this space. My question for you in the vein of that is, if somebody's coming after you who has ambitions of building something like the warehouse, a place where people can come and be themselves, what would your advice be?
You know, I don't know. I think anything like that, you just learn as you go.
Sure.
You know, and you gain experience gradually and, you know, I would hope they would have a better plan than we had, which was none at all. But it's an interesting business and a hard one.
Sure. And it's humbling to hear one of the greats say that, you know, placemaking and scene building is an incredibly hard thing to do. And so if it's something you're going to commit to, you better either have a plan or a hard head. Right.
And deep pockets.
You guys had a Railroad Square connection too, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. I think it was 83 or 84. We built a 60 by 90 state of the art greenhouse over there.
Yeah.
Jay and I did. And we were loosely in the truck business. We would go down to South Florida, you know, Davie, Florida.
Uh huh.
And haul back loads of areca palm trees and try to mark them up a little bit. And we tried to grow a few things for the flower shops that we have in there. But there again, that was a struggle. You know, we were trying to maintain it. It was a lot more work than we wanted to do. And we were kind of glad that the hurricane tore it down.
Now, I, who am a rather young hipster, I'm only 37, I caught the tail end of the warehouse. And then it was a little more organized. You know, there was like set hours and you could go in there and play a little pool and hang out. To know that it came from this type of Wild Wild West mentality of, you know, just like whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
Is such a cool thing. As you're, you know, in your golden years, and they are gold. Yeah. I mean, you are Dwayne Daughtry. Is there anything you still want to do?
Oh, you know, some people say when they retire that, you know, they go nuts because, you know, they can't find anything to do. But I'm, you know, I've always been a great reader, and I can read most any day and traipse around, chasing my girlfriend around, you know. So I stay busy enough.
Sure.
I don't like yard work anymore, I can tell you that.
Well, in closing, I have to say that, you know, before you guys, there was just nothing on Gaines Street. And to see what it's turned into, for better and for worse, in all different types of spectrums, you guys were really the pioneers that cut through that bush. And with the passing of Jay Scott and Paul Rutkowski, pioneers of that corridor, I don't think that there was any better conversation that I could have in that honor and in the honor of art and culture than with you, somebody who helped build it. I appreciate you so much for joining us today.
Well, that's very kind of you to say that.
Absolutely. And so I'll close out by just saying thank you, Dwayne, and thank you all for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. See you next time. Bye-bye.